This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now for the Rex Ryan Report, brought to you by Bud Light. And the coach joins us right now with a wild week 7 that we've already been talking about for a while. But, man, there's so many places we can go. But I know, Bart, that you guys both are probably dying to dive into this Cowboys thing and what happened with this team. Bart, you said it last week that the Cowboys have always been soft, and people flipped out about you saying it. It's funny how today,
and
now everyone is saying it. And what we saw, and Rex, I guess that's the perfect place to start. What we saw after Dalton gets hit by Bostic, and I guess what we didn't see, which is a response to them, as a coach, how are you looking at your players after a moment like that?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't have had to look far for me, because I would have been out there. If I mean, there's no way in hell that's not acceptable, and you're not going to do it. But Bart hits it on the head. We know that team's soft. We know they are. And here it is. You know, remember, this is the same team that had trouble running to the football for 70 plays. And we expect something other than this. And this was absolutely atrocious. And as a football team, oh, hell no. You may beat us. You may do whatever. You damn sure ain't going to do that to our quarterback without repercussion. And not only that, we always had a thing. If you take out one of ours, we're going to take out two of yours. Great and that guy. Was a promise. And it was a given. And I'm sorry, but that's the life we live. It might not be ethical and all that. It doesn't matter. We stood for something. This team's standing for nothing. And I will say this. Like, there would have been fireworks, 100% fireworks.
Yeah,
go ahead, Bart. Tell them what would have happened.
They would have had to call the police out there, because it would have been too many fights for them to break up. They would have had to call the authorities out there, because this is the thing. Not only is Andy Dalton your quarterback, Andy Dalton is a veteran quarterback that has respect in this league, that has done everything the right way. If you do that to that type of player, you have no respect for the game. The Steelers defended Mason Rudolph and went out there, and it was a melee. That shows you the culture of Pittsburgh. I mean, it wasn't just some fight. You saw Pouncey coming over the top with overhand straight rights, crosses, uppercuts, whatever he could. And that's what the response I expected. But, you know, to go back to Rex's early point, when we ever played the Dallas Cowboys, we always realized and said that they were a front-running team. This is a team, and players run around, and I don't know if they come in with it, but when they get into that environment, they acculturate and they embrace it, because they get more credit for being superstars or important pieces of the NFL without any of the accomplishments that you're supposed to have on the resume. They've never overachieved. They've always been a team that we say before the season, oh, this is their year. We talk about Cleveland, how every year everybody believes in Cleveland, this is their year. Well, how about Dallas? We do that. We talk about Jerry's World. So they walk around with this bravado, because Texas and Dallas is so big, it's almost like their own country. So they walk around, they get patted on the back for accomplishing absolutely nothing. So they walk around with this smug belief that they're better than other people, right? Because they got the best facilities, because they got the high-profile owner. They just don't have the W's and the hard-felt wins to get the respect of those in the league. So everybody knows that if you hit them in the mouth, they don't respond. And the fact that McCarthy has to come out and defend that means that this is much bigger than a McCarthy problem. This is more of a, to me, Dallas Cowboys problem in the type of tone and environment that they set about the brotherhood and what it means to wear the star. Because I thought that wear the star was something that you had to stand up for, and that you would not only play for the guys that you're playing for now, but also to respect Michael Irvin, to respect Deion Sanders, to respect Charles Haley, to respect, you know, Williams, to respect Flozell the Hotel, to respect Larry Allen. Are you serious? That just happened to a team on the offensive side of the ball, that Larry Allen, the biggest gangster to ever walk around in the NFL from Compton? I'm talking about, you know, the only person that I've ever apologized to. Are you freaking kidding me? This is the Dallas Cowboys?
You're so right, Bart. And the other thing, too. Look, from day one, we talk about fighting. Rules of wearing the decal. All right? Always grab the other color jersey so your guy gets an extra couple of pops in. We teach it. They don't teach nothing there. And you're exactly right. Imagine you mentioned Larry Allen. How about the big tackle that we had for a hot second, Eric Williams? Same type of deal, man. Remember, he was scaring everybody in the damn locker room. He's setting his pads before a game. I'm like, damn. But that's what you think of when you think of the Dallas Cowboys. They ain't playing like that.
They're a bunch of individuals. That means they're a bunch of individuals. They're not a team. Those are a bunch of collective individuals looking for a way to survive. And this is a team that's given up not only on their selves, but giving up on their team and the organization. They're just trying to get through the season. The problem is you still have about 10 games or 9 games left. So if that's what the type of performance that you're going to give.
In a winnable division, no less.
You're winnable division.
The Eagles need to cut
salary. They're right in the middle of it.
Yeah,
they're right in the middle of this. Yes. And yes, you can. I mean, I don't care. If you back into the playoffs, it's okay. But here's the thing. I will say this. Mike McCarthy has, like, the players haven't heard you. You haven't identified, like, nobody identifies with you. Nobody's hearing you, your message. None of it. Okay? But this was the only time after his press conference at the end, where I saw emotion in his face, where it was like, no, this is it. I think he finally realized, hey, you know what, Mike, you're the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. You either coaching this or allowing it to happen. And to me, he showed that emotion in his face. It showed that he finally gets it. Nobody gives a rat's about you won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. You ain't their coach. They gave up on you. When it was some guy that looks like he's just a water boy or something. And so right now, so to me, it's like you haven't done anything. And he finally realized, you know what, I better step my dang game up. And he finally looked like I saw it in his face finally. And we'll see if this team's different because of it. You know, we'll see.
Now, I wanted to wait till the end, but, you know, it's a perfect transition into something that I want to get into, and the only thing I want to get into with you with the Jets. And it has to do with just what you just said, is the fact that as a head coach, right, you're either teaching it or allowing it to happen. But it's also when you see what happened to Adam Gase, or maybe what he did to himself. I almost feel, I said this, he fired himself. Because if he's not the play caller anymore, what is he? I mean, Rex, he's not a leader of men. He's not a developer. So essentially, what is he now at this point?
Right now, he's sit back playing out the string. And that's what he's doing. He knows he's fired. Damn, I mean, look, everybody will fire him. He's going to be gone. At the end of the year, that's the way the Johnsons handle it. They fired many guys or whatever, but that's how they do it. It's a class way to do it, let you coach out the season. But this guy doesn't even want to. And I think he's just trying to get it over with. That's what I see from him. He gives up play calling duties and all that. Like, come on, there isn't a guy on that staff that you'd sit back and say, oh, this guy's done a hell of a job. I would say BS. None of them's done a good job. Okay, so to me, that's going to be the easiest thing for a new coach coming in. Like, look, when I came in, I kept Mike Westhoff. I kept Ryan Schottenheimer. Those guys were part of the solution. You know, not part of, you know, like, but the other one, man, I'd get rid of these. I'd run every single one of them out. It would take me 5 seconds to do it.
I tell you what, you know, watching Mims a little bit and watching Perriman, it kind of gave me a glimpse of what it maybe could have looked like at the beginning of the season. If Crowder maybe was there as well, then they may have had enough weapons. But it was a lack of talent. You saw that they didn't have the weapons to stay up, and it looked like Buffalo was sleepwalking. Once they made the decision we shouldn't be playing a zone for the Jets, you know, and I think maybe the zone was for more Joe Flacco, and then they decided to heat him up, and you saw the lack that they couldn't have any adjustments left. But I want to go to another game, and, you know, it was a game that was a throwback, and remember the old AFC North, and it used to include the Tennessee Titans, it used to include the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it used to include the Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens, and, of course, you know, Cleveland and Cincinnati. But that was an old throwback game, and Ben almost let him back in it. But I thought if you really want to take a step back and look at it, it looks like Pittsburgh, to me, you know, is the best team in that division. And I'm looking at our old team and thinking that maybe they should be out there really aggressively making a move for a guy like Julio Jones or A.J. Green, because if the Steelers are going to be able to play like that with Claypool and with some of the other weapons they have and Ben playing at a high level, then it looks like to me like Lamar Jackson don't have enough firepower on the offensive side, because it looks like they've put almost every high-priced free agent and draft pick on the defensive side of the ball and adding on with Yannick, which was needed, but they still are a little short when it comes to, you know, getting some firepower, and Dez Bryant is not the answer.
Bart, I get where you're coming from. But I think what Eric DaCosta did in bringing in Unique and Dakwe showed you that they're gonna try to thinking about beating Kansas City, and they know to do that you're gonna have to get there with a 4-man rush. You can't blitz because you can't match up.
Absolutely.
Against their weapons. And so I think they took that approach already. And I get where you're coming from, Bart. I get where you're coming from, but you can't make every single move. This was something that was available to them at the right price. We had an old saying, right player, right price. And I think they got that in the Unique and Dakwe. And look, let's not give up on this Raven offense, because I think they just got to – go back and do what Lamar Jackson does best, and try not to get into a, you know, where he's dropping back to throw 40 times a game. And they'll be fine. I think this week, I think the Ravens match up with Pittsburgh, and I think they're going to beat Pittsburgh. And we'll find out. We'll see who's right and who's wrong. But I think Baltimore can win this game.
Well, the good thing is they're coming off a bye, and Pittsburgh is coming off a physical game, and hopefully the fresher team will win if they don't come out flat. But I'm still hoping they got one last move in. Could you imagine if they were able to get Julio Jones and
no.
be able to get Julio Jones added to that offense, and he could be the guy that's able to work, or A.J. Green, a guy who's available a little bit. You know, I know so many places we want to go with you, and listen, Green, we can focus on the AFC. We can focus on the AFC North a little later. But let's go over to what you saw from your favorite topic outside of your son, Danny Dimes, who clocked 21 miles an hour.
Dude, couldn't get 22, though, could he?
You know, that's the problem. He tried to get 22. He should have geared down to 19, and he would have been fine. He would have strived it in. But Baker Mayfield had a career-defining second-half response, you know, after OBJ went out. But, I mean, I want to keep it in perspective. It was the Cincinnati Bengals.
Right.
How does he continue to answer the critics, and is he capable of answering the critics if the competition on the other side is a little tougher?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out. Let's face it. I mean, if he doesn't throw that touchdown pass, they lose to the Bengals. We're saying how the other kid outplayed him on the other side. Right. So, yeah. I mean, that's just the facts of it. But Baker Mayfield, make no mistake, he had one hell of a football game. After, of course, the first five incompletions and the one interception, from that point on, he was amazing. And the crazy thing about this is it all happened when Odell Beckham went in the game.
Went out, yep.
And to me, it's
sense.
Like, no, it shouldn't make any sense. Look, OBJ is one of the best receivers in the league, so this makes no sense. Yet, what happened is, and you heard him after his press conference, he talked about how, I think we see that we can use all of our players and we can trust everybody. I think he was speaking to the play calling and not trying to force feed Odell Beckham, but to let the offense work. And I think that's kind of what happened. And he played a hell of a lot better than he's played, you know, these last several weeks. So to me, I think maybe we learned something there about, hey, look, just let the offense run, and we'll see a better Baker Mayfield because of it.
Well, we saw this in Detroit, too, because you saw Stafford used to always try and force everything to Megatron. And then what happens when Megatron retired, he had one of his best seasons with Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, because the ball went where the defense dictated it to, and you didn't have to try and satisfy a receiver and try and feed him. Not that Megatron was ever a distraction. You know, it was just that Stafford wanted to make sure that he fed him, and he used him as a crutch, not as, you know, he didn't go where the ball was supposed to go.
Right, no, and it's, I mean, to me, give me the best players. That's who I would want to play with. But I think there's some, and especially, you mentioned Stafford, but especially Baker Mayfield's makeup.
Yeah.
He wants to be the freaking guy. He wants to be the guy doing the commercials. He wants to be the face of the franchise. That's the kind of guy he is. And when you take it from him, when Odell Beckham came in,
takes
you basically took that from him. And so, to me, for some reason, it makes no sense, but for some reason, he plays better without him.
It'll be interesting to see how it goes the rest of the season now with Odell being out with the ACL tear that he revealed this morning. But you know, it is interesting how you mentioned that, and Bart, how you bring up Stafford and Megatron, because it could be that feeling that you just feel this pressure knowing that, when Odell's not getting targeted, the whole world knows about it because he talks about it. He's whining. He's, you know, he obviously is very moody when he's not getting the ball. So you feel like, I got to take care of him so much that it almost distracts you and keeps you from doing just playing the game naturally. And maybe that'll change. So that'll be worth watching. But another thing, Rex, we really need to watch now is what's going on in New England.
The chicken or the egg. The chicken or the egg.
It's Cam Newton being benched. Now, there's a lot of this. Yeah, talk about an onion. This game had so many different layers to it because of Jimmy G coming back to Foxborough, Tom Brady having another great game, and almost like Belichick wanting to look to the owner's box saying, told you, right? Told you we should have kept this kid. But still, what you see out of Cam Newton, him getting benched second half is just it's poor performance by him. But is Cam still Cam? Is this rust? Is this a new scene? Or is he just not what he used to be? What do you say?
Well, he's definitely not what he used to be. And I've been saying it forever. This team has no weapons. Yep. So here's the problem. You know, you want to see how great Tom Brady is? It's not the 370 yards he threw for yesterday. It's look at New England. This guy won a Super Bowl with this sorry group.
Yes.
This guy won 12 games last year with this same group. So to me, that's how good Tom Brady is. And I told anybody that wanted to listen that, hey, you take the greatest player of all time is greater than the greatest coach of all time. And Tom Brady is showing everybody that, and New England is also. And that's what I see here. Cam Newton, guys, let's go back. He was 0-8 his last eight games that he started in Carolina. And the fact that, yes, I was hoping that he turned back the clock. I was. And I think I fell, you know, victim of it too, man. I thought he was back when I saw that Seattle game. What we found out later is that's just Seattle's defense. They give up 500 yards a game. So that's, you know, it's kind of fool's gold. But right now, he can't hit it. And that's the thing. His fundamentals are awful too. Like he's, you know, he how do you short arm like passes? Like he's bouncing balls, or he's, you know, hanging them way over people. It's unbelievable. He looks so bad right now. It's really unfortunate.
See, I think he still can play, but he has to play with a team that's ready to build where he can be the finishing piece. New England for years have got away with bad draft picks, and N'Keal Harry would be one of them, and being able to hold on to players that played a particular role that was over the hill a little bit, but they did something specifically well. Like Edelman, you know, used to always be able to separate, but now he's 34 years old, and he's starting to really reflect his age. And, you know, for years, everybody, you know, we saw this with Peyton Manning, right? Peyton Manning was a guy who made a average offensive line look great. Tom Brady was a guy that made average players look great. He was a guy that made guys look like stars. Hell, he took Danny Woodhead and made Danny Woodhead a household name.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, people, he had his own T-shirts, got wood, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. And he was Danny Woodhead. We knew what Danny Woodhead was. Like, damn. Was Danny Woodhead that damn good? What the hell was we doing? Why did we let him go? You know what I'm saying?
That's a great point.
But it's just because Tom Brady is that good. He's always right. He's a force multiplier. You see it happening in Tampa. And the difference is, not only is Tom Brady still the GOAT, now he has one of the best rosters in the game with no flaws. And when you add Antonio Brown to the slot, it's going to be almost impossible because you got two vertical guys on the outside. You got a pass catching tight end, and also you're going to be able to put Antonio Brown in the slot. So for years, I've always believed that it wasn't about the triangle. It was the fact that Jordan was in it and Scottie Pippen, and it was Kobe and Shaq in it. And, you know, because the triangle didn't look like nothing when it was out here with the Knicks. You know what I mean? So the triangle.
Right.
So it ain't about the triangle. It's about the person. You know, who's your best player? You know. So for years, I thought that Bill Belichick would retire after Tom Brady left, because he knew that it was more about Tom than it was about his X's and O's and his ability to acquire talent. Because for years he had did horrible in the draft. He's been wrong on so many draft picks. He's been wrong on so many players. And now people are going to finally understand that it was about having the greatest player arguably to ever put on the pass, not about his genius. Anybody can be a genius when you have the best player in the world executing and making you right.
Well said, Bart. And when you look at it, if we would have had Tom Brady as our quarterback, no offense to, you know, to Mark Sanchez, to Geno Smith, whatever, you think we would have won all them games? I think we would have won a hell of a lot of them. and we'd have a lot of banners up there. And I believe that.
We'd have won a couple of Alex Smith. We need much.
Yeah, we didn't need it because our defense was a hell of a lot better than New England's ever was. So the thing is, you're right. It's this quarterback was so dang good. You know, Tom Brady was so dang good. And look, Belichick's the best coach of all time. We get it. But this guy is such a difference maker. And you're right when you talk about the people that he would draft. They would always have bad drafts. Always. And it just now it's finally caught up to him. For 3 years I've been saying how horrible their talent is. And man, you see it big time.
And look at the division now too, when you think about how the Bills at 5-2, the Dolphins at 3-3, and they're going with their rookie quarterback now coming out of the bye with it obviously very much in play for a playoff spot, with the Patriots at 2-4, which we haven't seen that in 20 years, them being this late in the season, under 500. We'll see what happens in Week 8, but Rex, always great to talk to you after what was a really interesting Week 7. We'll catch up with you next week. All the best.
Tell your son.
All right, thanks, guys.
Tell your son, Rex, to look up because your body goes where your face goes. So he looked down and he fell down.
I know it. Come on, Daniel Jones. Come on, buddy. We always know that. How do you? Hey, you're stumbling. What do you do? Eyes to the sky.
Exactly.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.